welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Series in this hour. Later on, we pick up on storylines we've been following on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and One Man's Family. But first, episode 7 of 10 of the Adventures by Morse story, The Cobra King Strikes Back, a syndicated episode from June 2nd, 1946.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The Cobra King Strikes Back, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
Almost from the moment they reached Angkor Thom from Saigon, Captain Bart Friday, his secretary Patricia, and Skip Turner became prisoners of the strange folk of the Cambodian jungles. And with them, Professor Lebrun, Celia Carter, and Perry Mills. They were kidnapped from Angkor Thom by an elephant caravan and abandoned in the Temple of the Gorillas, where they were recaptured by hillmen and strapped to wild ponies. They were taken behind a giant waterfall and forced to climb the interior of a hollow mountain or series of ladders until finally they reached an ancient monastery situated on the peak. But listen to Captain Friday tell it.
All the time we were laboring through these queer adventures, we were wondering what had become of our original leader, Dr. Howard Carter, the old archaeologist who so strangely disappeared from Saigon, and also Taquan, the young Cambodian scholar. When finally we were brought high up to the mountain temple, we were led before a huge door that reached to the vast ceiling of a great hallway. The door was thrown open, and Celia, exhausted by the strain of the journey, gave one look into the room and fell headlong across the threshold in a faint. She'd seen her father, Dr. Carter.
Celia!
Dr. Carter, you here?
What's happened to my daughter?
She's okay, just exhausted. She'll be all right.
My friends, my dear friends. Oh, but it's good to see you again. Here, lift her onto the couch beside the fire.
Easy now. Yep. Yeah, there she is.
Oh, poor child. The shock of seeing you, Dr. Carter, after such a hard trip.
You'll find a stimulant on the table, Captain. It's been a bad trip?
Yeah, nothing to worry about. I'm only surprised it hasn't happened sooner.
Too hard on the girls, I'm afraid. By the way, where are Perry Mills and Professor Lebrun?
Oh, they'll be here in a jiffy. Hey, what kind of a burglar's hangout is this, anyhow? Are you a prisoner, too?
Hello there, Skip. What's this about prisoners?
Oh, a lot of monkey-faced guys took us prisoners, and they've been packing us all over the landscape like a lot of cargo. Ain't you a prisoner here?
My dear Skip, none of us are prisoners. You haven't been prisoners at any time.
The heck we ain't.
Celia's coming around.
Poor child, I warned her what it meant to follow me into the jungle, but she insisted on coming.
Hello there, Celia. All right now?
Did I faint?
I'm afraid you did.
Oh, hello, Dad. Sorry I'm such a baby.
Now, my dear, a little rest, and you'll be fit as a fiddle. How do you like being secretary to an archaeologist for this time?
Is that what I've been doing?
Exactly.
Swell. Can I have another sip of that?
What you need is a good long sleep.
What I need more than that is a big plate of ham and eggs.
And that's exactly what you shall have. At least what corresponds in Cambodia to ham and eggs.
Yeah, what's that? Elephant ham and hummingbird eggs? Well, anyway, I'll have some of the same.
There'll be Cambodian ham and eggs for everyone.
What a beautiful room, Dr. Carter. All those deep, furry rugs on the floor.
All of you make yourselves comfortable. Those fur rugs are to lie on. Just stretch out and relax until the food arrives.
Hey, you carry on here like you was a boss. You ain't kidding us, are you?
No, Skip, I'm not kidding you.
Uh-oh, who's this?
Selhunga Ponte Atara, Tuan.
Well, chanting. He strikes a silver bell and servants appear. Dr. Carter, you're not a mystic.
Well, not at least. At least not in a sense you'd give the word.
Dr. Carter, you say you're not a prisoner and that we're not prisoners?
No. I repeat, you were never prisoners. At any time in your journey, all you would have had to say was turn back and your party would have been returned to Saigon. In fact, at the Temple of the Gorillas, weren't you warned? Yes, begged to return to the coast.
That's right, Dr. Carter.
Well, Professor Lebrun and my assistant, Perry Mills. How are you, my boy?
Oh, fine, thank you, sir.
Ah, Professor Lebrun, between you and Taquan, you brought them through splendidly.
What's this?
Daquan.
Hey, say, Professor Lebrun, did you and Dr. Carter slip something over on us?
Afraid so, Peggy.
You mean you knew all along that we weren't prisoners?
Quite right, Latusha.
Well, how perfectly abominable.
See here, Lebrun, why did you do that?
Orders, Captain.
Orders from whom?
Dr. Carter, the head of the expedition, and his right-hand man, Daquan.
Daquan? Daquan? Where does he come into the picture? We haven't seen him since we left Encore.
And yet, he was with you all the time.
Hey, you mean he was in our elephant caravan?
Yes, Skip.
And was he at the Temple of the Gorillas when we thought we'd been abandoned?
I'm afraid he was.
And did he ride those wild ponies with us and climb that mountain of stepladders?
He was in the rear party of guards coming up the mountain, Perry. Right behind Skip Turner here. Most of the time.
Well, I'm a son of a gun.
See here, Dr. Carter. This hocus-pocus is all very amusing and dramatic. But why did you vanish from Saigon, leaving word for us to follow? Why didn't you meet us at Angkor as you said you would? And why were we brought here in the guise of prisoners? What's the object of it?
Not so fast, Captain Friday, not so fast. There's plenty of time for everything. Just now, it's much more important that you relax. You've made a tremendously hard trip.
But where's Daquan now? Why isn't he here?
He is.
What?
He is here.
Oh, well, perhaps he is, Doctor, but I'll be doggone if I can see him.
Perry, look in the chair just behind Patricia.
Behind me?
Well, for Pete's sake, old soul besides yourself. All dressed up like a Chinese junk shop.
Say, how long have you been sitting there, Daquan?
All the time you have been in the room, Perry.
You were sitting there when we came in?
I was.
Well, why didn't you speak? I don't like to have people sneaking around behind my back.
I do not waste words, Miss Patricia. Only when I have something to say do I open my mouth.
Why are you in those robes? The last time we saw you in Angkor, you were in American clothes.
Dr. Carter will explain all.
Daquan is wearing his rightful costume now, the robes of the Khmer priesthood.
You a priest? Why, at the University of California, I never thought of you as anything but a Cambodian student.
When I was at your American university, I was a student, Perry.
But you probably knew more than most of the professors even then, is that it?
Even so. And what then?
Well, apparently, with your knowledge, you should have been doing the teaching.
To have boasted of my knowledge would have been a display of pride. Pride and learning are not brothers. You must forego one or the other.
Oh, here's food. No, don't get up. Stay right where you are on the rug.
You aren't going to ask us to eat off the floor, I hope, Doctor.
You see, they're bringing tiny benches for tables. You can be comfortable and still enjoy your food.
Oh, I don't want to be on this couch. I want to lie on a rug and eat off a little table, too.
Oh, well, my daughter's getting to be a problem child. But I'll get a rug for you. Selong, I poye te to.
Achatron!
Hey, what about it, preacher? You going to join us on the floor?
Preacher?
Sure, you are, ain't you?
I am a Khmer priest, if that is what you mean.
Sure. Priest, preacher, what's the deal?
I'm afraid the Khmer priest is quite a different specimen from the American clergyman, Skip.
Well, that's okay. Anyway, you want to come down here on my rug?
Thank you, Mr. Skip. I have eaten.
Oh, yeah? Well, I hope you won't feel hurt then if I tear into this jungle hash.
I shall not feel offended.
Fun, isn't it, Patricia? Food's good, too.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't ham and eggs, though.
I'm too hungry to care what it is.
Why so pensive, Captain Friday?
I've been watching those queer logs burning in the fireplace. They look like bleached human bones writhing in the flames.
Limbs from the Fromager tree, Captain. They give off a peculiar greenish light, don't they?
Yeah. A strange scent. I didn't suppose one could travel back through the centuries through the sense of smell, but that's exactly what the fumes from that fire do to me. Sends my imagination plunging back through the ages when this must have been a stronghold of the Khmer civilization.
Oh, why, Boris, what's gotten into you? I always thought of you as a very prosaic detective. I've never heard you talk like this before.
It's probably because I never smelled the smoke of burning Fromager logs before.
Well, the wood of the banyan tree also has a very decided scent, Captain. Is it any wonder that the rest of the world looks upon the East as a realm of magic? When even the very jungles can make the imagination reel.
My senses are reeling all right, but not because of any magic. Dr. Carter, could you please tell me if I'm going to have a comfortable bed tonight, or do I get another pile of straw to sleep on?
Much more to the point at this moment than the smell of Romans or of onion smoke. Yes, Patricia, I assure you, you'll have comfortable sleeping quarters. Different from any room you've ever occupied before, though. But come, drink up. You'll never sip another beverage like this anywhere else in the world.
Hey, you got much of a kick?
It isn't that kind of a drink, Skip. It'll relax and restore your tired bodies. In the morning, you'll awaken cool and refreshed, and much of your renewed vigor you may lay to this drink.
Okay, I take it your word. Bottoms up, everybody. Okay.
Yeah, now I'll show you each to your sleeping quarters.
Just a moment, Dr. Carter. Aren't we going to thrash out all this funny business?
There's another day tomorrow, Captain. Rest now, and tomorrow your mind will be clear to absorb what I have to say. And there are many things, I assure you.
If that's the way you want it, Doctor.
Come along now, Cecilia. You and Patricia first. I've arranged for you to be together. It'll be more companionable.
Hey, are you asleep, Celia?
Oh, no. I thought I was dead tired. It's no use. Who ever heard of a bedroom with a fountain in it?
Well, this is one. And what tremendous rooms, like a room in a museum. I'm glad your father left us plenty of candles.
Gosh, gives me the shivers to think of hopping out of bed in the morning on that cold stone floor.
We might even dash into the fountain for a morning dip.
Oh, no, thanks. I'm inclined to be clean, but not that clean.
Bed's comfortable, though.
I always did like these built-in beds with canopies and things. Makes me feel like the Queen of Sheba.
Now, seriously, Celia, do you suppose this is the end of our journey?
You mean, is this the lost temple Dad was looking for?
Mm-hmm. Only, I thought it was a whole city, not just a temple.
Yeah, so did I. And I got the idea the place he was looking for was uninhabited. Well, this place looks like it had always been lived in. Oh, I wish those shadows way over at the other side of the fountain wouldn't keep moving. It gives me nerves.
Where? Oh, over there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's just the flickering of the candles when a breeze blows through.
Mm.
The place is airy, isn't it?
I suppose so. Oh, I wish I could sleep.
Well, it's the newness of the surroundings as much as it is the fountain that keeps us awake when we're dead tired.
Oh, I'm so tired I don't have the least reaction of relief or pleasure. Now that I know we're no longer prisoners.
Hold it, Celia.
What is it?
There is someone in the room with us.
Are you sure?
Of course. I heard a step and saw a shadow.
What's that horrid smell?
It smells like an animal, doesn't it?
I don't know.
It's an animal smell, all right. I've been around zoos and places long enough to recognize that.
You think there's an animal in our bedroom?
It smells kind of doggy smell. There, did you see it?
Yes, I saw it, Patricia. That wasn't a dog, it stood up like a man.
Probably is a man. Darn it.
What's the matter, Patricia?
I can't find my revolver. Give me yours.
Well, I left mine in the room where we ate.
Oh, fine. Ooh, what a horrid smell.
Do you suppose we could get out of the room?
Well, we don't know where to go.
Celia, it's coming toward us.
It's got robes on.
Why does it make that terrible noise like a dog?
Look at its face.
Go away.
Ooh, Captain Friday, Skip, go away.
Don't let it touch me. Get it away.
Oh, Celia, don't faint. Help.
Smoker.
Oh, don't touch me.
You have disobeyed. You die, fool.
Oh.
You've murdered him. Taquan, you killed him with a knife.
Left to themselves in their exotic bedchamber in the Temple of Priests high on a Cambodian jungle mountain, Patricia and Celia experienced adventure of utter terror. An animal-like thing on 2 feet crept to their bedside, and at the last moment was stabbed by the Cambodian student Taquan. And now in the sunshine of the next morning, Captain Friday and Professor Lebrun are on a balcony overlooking the dazzling landscape.
By Jove, Captain Friday, isn't this tremendous? Where else in the world could you stand on a balcony anywhere from 12 to 15 centuries old and look out over an unbroken jungle such as this? Not up to snuff this morning.
Yeah, well enough, Lebrun.
Bed hard?
Answered the purpose.
Food give you indigestion?
Digestion's perfect.
I see. Ah, then it must be your conscience.
See here, Lebrun, what's the idea of all this prodding?
Prodding? I say, you've got me wrong, Captain Friday. I've been standing here trying to make conversation for the past 10 minutes, and all I've been able to get out of you was a grunt.
Sorry if I've been rude. but this whole thing is beginning to get me down. I've taken on a big responsibility in this matter. Not only with the French government, but the safety of my secretaries involved.
All of which is quite true, Captain Friday.
Yet you and Dr. Carter and Taquan have acted secretly and without my knowledge or consent. I insist on knowing why I've been brought here, what it's all about.
I appreciate your position thoroughly, Captain, but I have nothing to do with the telling of the story. That is Dr. Carter's business.
What? Do I hear my name up for discussion? Oh, good morning, Captain Friday. And you, LeBrun. How did you spend the night?
Oh, I assure you, Doctor, in pleasant slumber.
Then I suppose a good substantial breakfast in order. Ah, splendid morning air at this altitude, isn't it?
Remarkable. Remarkable. Oh, by the way, Doctor, Captain Friday feels that he shouldn't be kept in the dark any longer.
Quite right, too, Captain. Oh, here's Perry and Skip. Good morning, gentlemen.
Oh, what a night. What a night. Mm.
It could have been twice as long, and I wouldn't have moved a muscle.
Slept well, then, I take it.
Oh, all over. Same goes for me.
Well, shall we wait out here for the girls? They should be out presently.
Sure, why not?
Oh, boy, this air's great.
Captain Friday, it'll take some time to go into all the details of what's happened. I might as well begin now as any time.
Hey, go ahead, Doctor.
In the first place, you were all brought here from Angkor as prisoners because you couldn't have penetrated the jungle otherwise. The native Cambodians are up in arms over the rumors that the famous seven-headed emerald cobra has been found. Even your guards would have taken pleasure in slitting your throats had they not been told by Taquan that you were prisoners being brought to the Temple of Priests for sacrifice.
Sacrifices? Oh, that's a swell idea. Who thought that one up?
You see, with the exception of Taquan and Fen Lo, there's no one this far back in the jungle who understands English. That's one of our greatest protections. As long as they don't turn the natives against us, we're safe.
You mean to say our safety depends on the friendship of Fen Lo, the murderer? The man I intend to take out of this jungle a prisoner?
I do.
Then why the Sam Hill did you ever bring us to this place?
Supposing I had not brought you, what would have happened to you then? What would you have done then?
Formed a caravan of my own, come into the jungle?
Exactly. That's just what I was afraid of. You'd have been led out into the jungles by faithless Cambodians and killed outright.
Hey, you really mean they'd have taken us for a ride?
Well, in the parlance of the underworld, that's exactly what you were facing.
Still, you could have told us all this beforehand.
Captain Friday, believe me, your safety lies in the fact that you didn't know you were prisoners. You acted like prisoners. You were sullen and resentful in the presence of guards. You wouldn't have been actors enough to pretend all this had you known the truth.
But why did you disappear from Saigon?
Yeah, and why didn't you meet us in Angkor like you said you would?
Gentlemen, I've been places and seen things in this jungle that no other white man has ever laid eyes on. Things that no other Occidental even suspects exist. Taquan Fen Lo have shown me the treasure houses of the old Khmer Kingdom. Wealth and glory that even the natives of Cambodia don't know about.
So you've been playing along with Fen Lo. Fen Lo, the outlaw.
Captain Friday, he may be that to you. To me, he is Fen Lo the prince. Fen Lo, the priest.
Well, Dr. Carter, did you see the seven-headed cobra?
Perry, my lad, you always were one to ask questions.
Oh, sorry, Doctor.
Hey, here comes Celia and Patricia.
Hey, come on over and join the party. I hope you realize you've been holding up breakfast.
Hey, boss, how soon can we get away from here?
Why, Patricia, what's happened? You're white as a ghost. You too, Celia.
Yeah.
Well, if you've been through what we have...
But, my dear children, if anything was wrong, why wasn't I told?
We screamed, but no one answered.
Screamed? Screamed? But why on earth should you scream?
Tell them, Patricia. I don't want to even think about it.
Oh, come, both of you. Sit here on this stone step.
I'll have food brought out here.
Well, in the first place, they put us in a room with a fountain in the center.
But every room used as sleeping quarters is the same. It's a combination. Ornament, drinking fountain, and bath.
Well, anyway, the running water kept us awake.
You say the fountain kept you awake? Oh, that's too bad. Breakfast will be out presently.
We were lying there talking when... suddenly, we saw something moving in the shadows. We couldn't see what it was because the fountain was between us. But we began to smell the most peculiar odor, like animals. Celia said it was like a dog.
Did you say dog?
You're sure it wasn't wolf smell?
I don't know. All I know that it was horrible. And then it began to come towards us. It was between us and the door. It kept creeping closer and closer. At first, we couldn't tell whether it was an animal or a man.
Oh, it was a man, all right.
Yes. Then suddenly, we saw its face. We both screamed.
Well, what was it like? Was it like an animal?
More like a madman. It whimpered and whined like a dog.
Impossible.
I didn't know there were any such things in this part of the world.
What on earth are you talking about?
Let the girls tell their own story.
We both screamed. And then it leaped toward us and grabbed Celia.
Oh, yes.
Wait a minute. Let me get Taquan.
No, please, Dr. Carter. I'd rather tell you folks what happened first.
Very well.
Well, just then, a shadow raced towards us. And I heard a voice say, "You disobey me, you die, fool," or something like that. And then...
Yes, Patricia?
It was Taquan. He stabbed the thing to death. He killed it right before my eyes.
What did you do then?
Oh, boss, I fainted. I don't know what happened after that, except that I have vague recollections that there were people working over me. Girls and women with long black hair, any number of people. And the hushed voices, all that sort of thing. But it was so far away, so detached from me that I hardly know whether it really happened or was only a dream.
Oh, that's exactly the experience I had, too. It couldn't have been a dream.
Hypnosis. Eastern mysticism.
And when did you have your next clear, normal consciousness? When did you awaken to your normal selves again?
About half an hour ago. I woke up and the sun was streaming into our room from those high arched windows and Celia was still sleeping beside me.
Everything was normal? No blood on the bed clothing or on the floor where this strange being was murdered?
No.
Patricia, tell them about our pajamas.
Well, there must have been evidence of the murder on us. The thing was killed right over us, and I remember seeing blood before I fainted.
Go on, Patricia.
Well, when we awakened this morning, we weren't in the pajamas we went to bed in. Our baggage had been opened and clean things put on us. The bedclothes had been changed, and everything was different.
What I would call super excellent service, hmm?
Your humor is a little misplaced at a time like this, LeBrun.
Oh, really now? I say, may I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Look here, Celia. Have you and Persia examined your luggage?
Yes. And that's something else that's queer.
How's that, Celia?
Well, we found the pajamas that we put on when we went to bed last night. The ones we were wearing when Taquan killed the man. We're all freshly washed and pressed and with our other clothes.
Patricia, are you certain you two didn't dream all this?
We didn't dream it, boss. It happened.
What do you make of it, Dr. Carter?
It's beyond me, Captain. I never heard of such a thing before.
The hallucinations of overtired brains.
Professor LeBrun, are you trying to make me sound mad? I tell you, it happened.
Please, believe me, Patricia. I'm only looking for a normal explanation to a highly improbable situation.
Why do you say improbable? Nothing is improbable so far from civilization. What do we know about this place? What do we know of the people who inhabit it? This is a hotbed of black magic and cobra worship.
Captain Friday, please, don't jump to conclusions. The priests in this place are wise and holy men.
So wise and holy that they'll choose a pair of murderers like Fen Lo and Taquan for their prophets.
Captain Friday, you must not fly in the face of fate like this.
Patricia's safety, the safety of the entire party, lies in your hands. You know what you're doing here, Dr. Carter? Are we safe? Whom do you trust? What right did you have to drag us all out here into the jungle? Can you answer these questions?
He do not need to answer them, Captain Friday.
Hey, Taquan.
I will answer for him.
Oh, here you are.
With your kindest indulgence, I am here.
What do you mean by entering Patricia's bedroom last night to slaughter one of your victims?
Slaughter? Enter Miss Patricia's bedchamber? I think I do not know what you mean.
You did kill that thing that made a noise like a dog. You did, you did.
I fear you are torn by the sinister claws of delusion. All last night, I rested peacefully upon my couch.
You did kill. I saw you. You said to me, he disobeyed me. He had to die. That was the last thing you said before I fainted.
You deny that you were near the girl's room?
It is my humble opinion that I was nowhere near them.
Hey, look here, Taquan. You got any proof?
Proof? Proof of what?
You know doggone well what I mean.
Just a minute, Skip. Taquan, can you guarantee our safety in this temple of priests, as this place seems to be called?
Safety? Who am I to promise safety? Even you, Captain Friday, whom I know to be a great detective in your own San Francisco, cannot hope to promise all of the citizens safety. He can do his utmost to protect them, yes, but even he cannot know what fate has in store.
I'll be a bald-headed monkey if you can't say the least in the most words.
You see, Dr. Carter, even your trusted guide won't promise us safety.
You must admit, Captain, his reasoning is sound.
Look! Look there on the terrace!
Hey, what's that, Taquan? What is that thing those priests are carrying into the jungle?
A body, Mr. Skip.
The
body of a man?
The body of a priest. You see, even a priest of the ancient Khmer line is not safe in this temple if...
If what, Taquan?
If he forgets the tenets of his religion or the laws of the ancient Khmers.
I see. And what law did he violate?
That no Khmer priest shall ever come near unto a woman.
I told you. I told you.
Safe within the temple of priests, but not safe after all, for within the temple are stranger terrors than they have yet had to face. Listen next week to the 8th episode of The Cobra King Strikes Back, entitled It Was Not Cannibalism. You are listening to the newest experiences of Captain Friday in Adventures by Morse.
Adventures by Morse, untuned to yesterday, episode 7 of 10 of that story, from June 2nd, 1946. This is an hour of continuing series, untuned to yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for One Man's Family, where we open the Book of Teddy, Book 78, Chapter 23, heard on NBC on October 4th, 1950.
One Man's Family, brought to you every weekday night at this time, transcribed by Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer. And many other fine, dependable pharmaceutical products. Overheard between Henry and Fanny Barber in the library.
Doesn't that hospital realize that Teddy Barber is Mrs. Elwood Giddings now? That even a nurse has a right to a honeymoon?
Oh, Henry, stop carrying on. One would think it was your wedding trip that had been delayed.
If it were mine, I wouldn't stand for it. I'll tell you that, Fanny. I'd give those brass hats a piece of my mind.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it is with the barbers today. Chapter 23, Book 78. It is a warm, pleasant October afternoon in Seacliff, San Francisco, and at the Barber family home, Elwood Giddings, Teddy's brand new husband, is sitting moodily on the terrace, staring at the bay, waiting for his wife to come off duty at Letterman Hospital so they can start on their honeymoon. Teddy, unhappily, was called back to duty right after the ceremony, and there have been further complications today. As Cliff says, poor Elwood never seems to get the breaks. In the library, Henry Barber, glancing out the window at Elwood's gloomy figure, turns and says to his wife,
"Yes, yes, I feel very sorry for the boy, Fanny.
Poor Elwood.
I don't see why Teddy didn't go right up to the major or the colonel, whoever it is, and say to him, 'Look here, sir, I'm going on my honeymoon. It happens only once in a lifetime, sir. I want a few days off.'"
Apparently, that isn't the way you talk to majors and colonels, Henry. Not at Letterman Hospital.
Yes, yes, the military. Yes. Give a man a little authority and he becomes a veritable Prussian. It wouldn't hurt that hospital to let Teddy off for a day or two. Well, she isn't the only nurse in San Francisco. There are plenty of nurses.
There aren't plenty of surgical nurses, Henry. Teddy's had very special training, and sometimes they need her desperately.
Yoo-hoo! Who's here?
Come in, Hazel.
You'll never guess this errand, Father. Oh, Mother. How are you?
There it is.
Hazel, how nice you look.
Thank you. My new sweater. Only represents 3 or 4 months of my time. Mother, do you suppose you could find my old high school Latin book?
Hazel, what for? At your age, I thought Latin would be a dead language for sure.
It comes alive at our house. Margaret's going to need all the help she can get.
Yes.
I don't remember a blessed thing, and I'm sure the new books aren't as good as the old ones. So if you could... Why, there's Elwood out there. What's he doing here?
Oh, poor Elwood. Yes, yes, he's waiting for the whim of the brass hats at Letterman Hospital, Hazel. Yes, waiting for these pompous Prussians to release his wife so he can go on a honeymoon.
Well, I knew Teddy was called back to duty last night. Hasn't she been home yet?
I was just pointing out to your mother, Hazel, those colonels and brigadier generals could let a girl off for a wedding trip. But no, armed guards will keep her in the cloister until 11 o'clock tonight.
Henry.
Well, what a shame.
This red tape gives you an idea of how regimented everything is getting to be.
Oh, Henry, now stop it. He's been fussing ever since lunch, Hazel.
Well, I feel sorry for the boy. When a man has his plans all made for a honeymoon...
Henry, you've talked more about this honeymoon than Elwood has. Now stop it.
Yes. But look at him out there, Fanny, chin in hand. A dejected figure.
Well, why don't you take him for a drive, Henry?
Yeah?
That's a good idea. You two get out in the car and cuss out the military to your heart's content.
Yes. Excellent suggestion. Excellent. Oh, Elwood. Elwood.
Yes, Mr. Barber.
Come in a minute, my boy.
All right, sir.
You know what we might do, Fanny? Why, it's 9 hours before Teddy can possibly get home. I'll drive Elwood over to San Rafael and see about getting a phone put in his house over there. The phone's in the office, you know, Hazel. Then we can drive on up the road.
Well, certainly wonderful weather for a honeymoon if we could ever get started. Good afternoon, Hazel.
Hello, Elwood. Dan and I would have come over to wish you two happiness, but I didn't hear until this morning that you didn't get away.
Yes, Hazel, that'll keep, that'll keep. Elwood, how would you like to go for a drive with me, eh?
Well, say, I was wondering how I'd pass the time until Teddy gets home. That's a good idea, Mr. Barber.
Lovely afternoon for motoring, eh, my boy?
Oh, yes, indeed, sir. I was just sitting on the terrace thinking what a beautiful view Teddy and I would have from our room at the Mark Hopkins if we ever get there. Must be a spectacular scene for the Mark Hopkins on a day like this.
We'll see some nice scenery, too, Edward. And I was just remembering, you can arrange to have your phone put in over there in San Rafael.
Why, say, that's great. Two birds with one stone, huh?
Now, don't try to sound so enthusiastic, Elwood. A drive to San Rafael isn't much of a substitute for a wedding trip.
Oh, well, we'll get started sometime tonight anyway. When you've been in the army, you just learn to roll with the punches.
Yes. I was just saying to Fanny and Hazel, Everett, those military people
Henry,
over there...
Henry, I don't want to hear another word about it.
Huh? Oh. Well, come along, Elwood. We'll have an enjoyable drive.
Will you be back for dinner, Henry?
No. We'll stop at some little roadside place for prime ribs of beef, Fanny. We'll make a real adventure of it. Come along, Elwood.
All right, Mr. Barber. Well, Hazel, we hope to see a lot of your family when we get all settled at San Rafael.
Yes, we're anxious to see your house, Elwood.
Well, there's lots to do to it. Kind of run down.
Elwood, if we're going to go, my boy, let's go.
Coming, sir. Well, thank you again, Mrs. Barber, for that superb lunch this noon. Never tasted anything better. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Mother, when you phoned last night and said they were married, I nearly dropped the telephone. Well, why, Hazel? You knew they had a license.
Oh, but it was so impromptu. Teddy, married by a justice of the peace. Did she seem very happy?
We didn't see very much of her, Hazel. They came rushing in to change their clothes and go on the honeymoon, and then she got those orders to report to the hospital.
What a blow that must have been.
Why are you smiling?
Oh, I shouldn't, I know. But things always seem to get so mixed up for Elwood. Why is it, do you suppose?
You know, I've thought about that, too. It isn't really his fault, either. Could it be some people actually are born unlucky?
I don't know. But every year, along about examination time, I have one son who maintains the very stars in the sky gang up on him.
How's Pinky doing at Stanford?
He has some very poor instructors. Nobody in the class likes them.
Oh, is that so?
Oh, yes. The professors aren't very bright this year. We're all being conditioned for a possible failure.
Hi.
Oh, Cliff, hello.
Well, where have you been, Clifford?
Oh, over at Claude's, just fooling around. The honeymooners get off?
Oh, no. There's been still another complication. Hospital asked Teddy to stay over this afternoon. She won't get home until 11 o'clock tonight.
No. Oh, poor old Elwood. Hazel, at breakfast, he said very seriously, he says, Cliff, have you ever heard of any other case where a man got married and spent his wedding night all alone? I couldn't think of anybody. The guy's unique, I'll say that for him.
Well, it isn't very nice for you two to laugh about it.
I know, Mom, but he looks so confident and solid. His whole personality seems to say, I came, I saw, I conquered. And then he strides into the room and slips on a banana peel.
Oh, wait. You reminded me of something.
Hmm?
Oh, I know. Weeny, weedy, weeky. I came, I saw, I conquered. I ran over here to get a Latin book.
You?
Must keep up with my daughter's homework, Cliff.
Oh. Well, look in the bookcases over there. The bottom shelf, Hazel. I think I kept some of the school books for sentimental reasons.
Over here?
No, to the left. The lower ones. And if you see a book called Dr. Lee Wong's 15-Day Diet, for goodness sakes, bring it out of the shelf.
Oh, hey, you aren't going on a diet, are you, Mom? You're perfect, ma'am, just the way you are.
No. Betty wanted me to read it. and I put it down somewhere and lost it.
What's Betty doing with a book like that? She's perfect, too.
You're in a pretty good mood today, Cliff.
Well, we got some beautiful dames in this family, particularly the eldest. Hiya, Mom.
Clifford, stop that.
Here it is, my old Latin. Thank you for keeping it, Mother. Now, if I go home and study like mad, I may be able to help...
Elwood!
Huh?
Teddy! Well, hello there!
Hey, I thought you weren't coming home to Louise small hours, Teddy.
Oh, hi, everybody. A perfectly wonderful thing happened. I got a 7-day pass.
Teddy!
I told Major Brixton about my plans to get married. He'd approved it and everything, and then he'd forgotten all about it. And just as we were washing up to go into surgery this noon, he said, Teddy, when are you going to get married? I said, Major, I was married yesterday. You should have seen the look on his face.
I can imagine.
And he said, well, where's your husband? So I said, poor Elwood was waiting at home for me so we could start on our honeymoon.
Uh-huh.
So, to make a long story short, he got a substitute for me right then, gave me a 7-day pass, and here we go.
Oh, that's wonderful, Teddy.
How nice of him.
Wait till we tell Henry about this.
Oh, they're wonderful to me. They really are. I've been so darn tired, you know. I worked last night, didn't get to bed until almost 3, and then up again at 7. Had an hour off this noon, but I couldn't sleep. I was going to try to stagger right on through until tonight if I had to. Oh, gee, it's good to be home. Well, we can start any time. I'll change my clothes and away we'll go. Where's Elwood?
Teddy. Elwood and your grandfather went to San Rafael. They won't be back until after supper.
What?
Oh, dear, you two are having a perfectly terrible time, aren't you, Teddy?
You see, Teddy, poor Elwood didn't expect you.
Oh, of course not, Mother Barbara. Well, that's all right. It's probably a good thing in a way. I had so little sleep. I was so tired. I was thinking as I came up the walk, there's nothing in the world I'd like better than to go up to my own room and sleep for a week.
Well, you go right ahead. Clifford can phone Dr. Fulshauer in the office at San Rafael, and maybe we'll catch Elwood.
Oh, if we can't, we can leave late tonight. Or tomorrow, even. After all, I've got 7 whole long days to be with Elwood. Well, I've got a whole long lifetime to be with him, if it comes to that.
Family again.
Beautiful night for driving, isn't it, Elwood? Look at that moon.
Yes, it is, Mr. Barber. What time is it, by the way?
Huh? Oh, 9:45. Want me to hurry?
Oh, no, take your time. Daddy won't be home till almost midnight.
One Man's Family, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from the 4th of October, 1950. And we close this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday with an episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, featuring Bob Bailey as star. This would be his fourth week on the series, part of the storyline The Alvin Summers Matter, and he would continue with the series until November of 1960, where two other actors would finish out the run in the leading role. The CBS broadcast from October 25th, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Where have you been, Johnny? I thought we had a date.
Oh, Gloria. I'm sorry, baby. I've already had a date.
What?
Remember the big gorilla at the corner table downstairs in the cantina? The one who kept staring at us?
Sure. What about him?
Well, he was waiting for me in my room just now. He didn't like the way I parted my hair, I guess, so he changed it with a gun barrel.
Johnny, are you all right?
Aside from a lump or two, sure.
Sounds to me like you need a little nursing, Johnny.
I always do.
Beautiful out on the terrace tonight.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Santo Tomas, Mexico. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Northeastern Fidelity and Bonding, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of additional expenses during my investigation of the Alvin Summers embezzlement case. Item 4, $3 American to Eduardo Moreno, M.D., the doctor who dressed the assorted lumps and bruises I'd collected from the strong arm who seemed quite convinced that I should leave town. For a moment, I figured he could be the man who was to contact me with information as to the whereabouts of Alvin Summers, the embezzler. But as it turned out, all he wanted to say to me was goodbye, and he said it very convincingly. But Gloria was waiting for me. She definitely seemed to want to get better acquainted. And although I didn't know what her angle was, I figured it might be fun finding out. I left the joint where I was staying and went up to the Playa del Mar, the big expensive hotel overlooking the sea. There was a terrace with some tables and a flamenco singer wailing at the moon. Gloria was at one of the tables. Hi.
Johnny, what in the world happened to you when I talked to you over the phone?
I'm sorry I'm late, Gloria. You can see by my face I ran into kind of a rough detour.
You all right now?
Yeah.
Johnny, you said it was that man who kept staring at us in the bar where we met?
That's the one. Real charming fella. Muscles, too.
What happened?
I went to my room to change before coming up here. He was waiting for me, worked me over. The general idea was I should leave Santo Tomas in a hurry.
But why?
I don't know. Yet. But somewhere along the line, I'm going to make it a point to find out. Cigarette?
Thanks. Well, looks like things are picking up a little.
How so?
I told you I'd found this place pretty dull so far. But now, with you getting beat up and told to get out of town, it's beginning to sound a little more interesting.
Well, I could do with more dullness and a few less bruises, believe me.
You must be down here on a lot more than just a vacation, Johnny.
Oh, I don't know. A lot of people apparently come down here to this town just for a vacation. That's why you told me you came here, remember?
There's only one difference.
What's that, Gloria?
I really am on a vacation, and I don't think you are.
Oh?
You're not the Santo Tomas type.
Why not?
Mexico City, maybe. Havana, maybe. But not Santo Tomas. No, I think you came down here to meet somebody. Or to find somebody.
Okay. Suppose I did. Who would I be looking for?
If you don't know, how would I?
Looking for, you, maybe?
Oh, now that's the nicest thing that's been said to me all day. If you are, it's too bad I didn't know it sooner.
Why?
It would have made this town a little more bearable. Waiting.
Or maybe you've been looking for me.
Let's not be blunt here. I thought I was being so subtle.
You have been looking for me?
Well, I must admit I've been looking for someone who's alive in this town. Of course, what I should say is that I've always been looking for you, that I...
Okay. I guess that leaves me right where I started from.
Hmm?
Skip it. So, we're just two happy people on a vacation.
Yeah. Okay, Johnny.
Okay. Hey, that music. That the flamenco singer you were telling me about?
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty weird, doesn't she? But I like it. You know something?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds even weirder from down below on the beach.
Oh?
Like to see for yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd like to.
Well, give me a minute.
What's the matter?
Speaking of people staring at you.
That guy again? Where is he?
No, it's a little man this time. Over at the end of the terrace, see him?
Oh, that's Benito.
Who?
The bellboy at my hotel. Hey, excuse me a minute. Be right back.
Sure.
Senor Dollar.
Hiya, Benito.
The desk clerk told me you'd come up here.
What's on your mind?
You told me you'd pay me money if I could get some information for you.
That's right. I want to know if anybody's been trying to contact me. You turn up anything?
Not at all that, senor, but the picture you showed
me. The one of Alvin Summers?
Si. I told you I thought I'd seen him here in Santo Tomas. Now I'm sure of it.
Good boy.
Tonight I talked to a friend of mine. I described Senor Summers to him. He told me he used to work for him as a houseboy.
Good. Did he tell you where Summers is now?
No, he could not tell me that.
Couldn't or wouldn't?
I do not know, senor, but he told me where the house is that Summers lived.
Where is it?
You could not find it, senor. It's in from the beach in the jungle a little way. I would have to take you there.
All right, let's go.
Well, not now. I'm supposed to be on duty back at the hotel. I must get down there at once before the hotel clerk finds out I'm gone.
When do you get off duty?
At midnight. I'll come to your room then and take you to Senor Summers' house.
Okay, midnight. Good boy, Benino.
A real good boy, senor?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Here.
Oh, gracias, senor. But you should not have come here.
Now, look, I've already had one guy tell me to leave town tonight. Don't you start.
No, I mean, you should not have come here to the Playa del Mar.
Oh, why not?
Because after you pay your check here, senor, you'll not have any more money left to pay me with.
Well, don't worry about it, Benita. I'll bully it through somehow. See you later.
Si, senor.
Well, hello, Dollar.
Oh, no.
Carson, E.K. Carson, remember?
Sure, the zipper salesman. What brings you up here?
Oh, same thing as you, friend. Out doing a little stepping.
I thought you told me down at the hotel that you figured half the world was just waiting to be zipped up. How can you afford to take the time off?
All work and no play, friend. Haven't you heard?
Yeah, well, I have a date. See you later, Carson.
I'm still waiting to get you into a cribbage game, friend.
Good. That's just what you do.
You mean play cribbage?
No, I mean keep waiting. When I got back to the table, Gloria was gone. I looked around, no sign of her. This I didn't get, and I didn't like. Why would she pull a disappearing act on me now?
Johnny.
Then I spotted her, just off the terrace on the path that led to the cabanas on the beach. I went over. She was carrying a scarf and wearing a one-piece bathing suit. The scarf looked bigger.
Hi.
Well.
I thought as long as we were going down to the beach, we might as well go for a swim.
Why not? Be right with you. Item 5 on expense account, $7 for one pair of swimming trunks, 5 for the trunks, and $2 to get the hotel shopkeeper out of bed to sell them to me. After all, I figured I ought to stay close to Gloria. That's the way she seemed to want it, and I wanted to know why. She could have some information on the whereabouts of Alvin Summers I could use. Well, she might.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
Come on, there's a place over against the rocks at the foot of the cliff.
Okay. What do we do now? Build a fire and roast marshmallows?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't bring any marshmallows.
Oh, it's just as well. I'm strictly the hot dog and beer type anyway.
Here we are. This is my place, Johnny. I come down here almost every night.
Oh, that's nice.
I told you there was a moon tonight.
Yeah.
And the flamenco singer. Music comes right down the rocks to us.
Doesn't she ever get tired?
Doesn't seem to.
What's she singing about? Do you know?
Uh-huh. It's about a man in jail in a little town. His sweetheart tosses a rose to him through the bars. It drives him crazy.
Cheerful.
There aren't any walls around you, Johnny.
Oh?
The only trouble is, I don't have a rose.
Well, who needs a rose?
Johnny. Darling.
Gloria, look, I...
You were saying...
You know something? I forgot what it was.
Good. Let's keep it that way, darling.
Well, it...
So who's thinking of moving?
Shh.
What is it?
They're in the moonlight coming along the beach.
Two men?
Yeah. Take a good look at the one in front.
Johnny,
yeah,
the
one who worked me over in my hotel room tonight. And it looks like he brought along a stooge with a machete.
They're looking for you.
Look, get around behind the rock here, then back up the path to the hotel.
No,
quiet,
Johnny.
Get going.
I'm not
going to
leave
will you.
Please, Johnny, please, don't go out there. Now, stay out of sight. They can't see us here in the shadows.
Gloria, sooner or later, I got a little matter to settle with that big ape, and might as well be sooner.
No, please, I don't want you to get hurt again, Johnny. I'm not going to leave you.
Okay, come on. Let's shift around to the other side of this rock and keep it quiet.
Can you see them?
Keep your head down.
Keep your eyes open. I saw him come down the path about half an hour ago. Maybe it's farther up the beach. Now, what's the water? Keep your head
down. That was close. Too close.
Yeah.
Johnny, are you in some kind of trouble?
Not yet. You seem pretty concerned about me.
I am.
You sure that was why you didn't want me to tangle with him?
Of course.
You don't know the guy, huh?
I told you I didn't. Why?
Oh, I was just wondering if maybe he was a friend of yours and didn't want me moving in on him.
Johnny, you're talking crazy. I've never seen him in my life before today in the bar of your hotel. I told you I didn't want you to get hurt again. I mean it. Maybe this will prove it.
Well, that's... pretty strong argument. Look, Gloria, I hate to, believe me, but I've got to leave.
What?
Must be almost midnight.
So?
So there's something I got to take care of.
Oh, fine.
I know, I'm sorry.
Pretty strange vacation you're on, Johnny.
Yeah. So, my timing was terrible. But I had to meet Benito, the bellboy, in my hotel room at midnight to find out more about Alvin Summers' whereabouts. I walked Gloria back up to her hotel and headed for mine. It was a couple of minutes after 12 when I got there. I walked into my room and started to reach for the light switch. Then I froze. The moonlight was streaming in through the louvered door to the balcony, and I could see a silhouette against it. Somebody was out on that balcony, crouching against the door. Slowly, carefully, I eased over to it, then suddenly jerked it open. Benito. And I knew I wasn't going to get any more information about Alvin Summers out of him. After all, you can't do much talking when your throat's been cut.
There'll be another exciting episode in our story of the Alvin Summers matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Well, there are some people you just wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley. But sometimes it can't be helped. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday, episode 2 of 5 of The Alvin Summers Matter, from October 25th, 1955, on CBS. And we'll be continuing all of these stories next week at the same time on Tuned to Yesterday. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.